It is a land use case after all. Okay. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the February 12th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. We have a number of changes in the calendar this morning, including with the communications items. I understand that we have someone substituting for Ms. Miller. Teresa Rayford, I think, is here in place of Ms. Miller. So let's start with the communications items, and then I'll go over. We have some other changes in the calendar because people not being here and things going back to commissioners' offices and such. But let's do communications first, please.
Item 133, request of Lene Block Miller to address council regarding Benson Tech.
So, Teresa, come on out, please. All right.
My name is Teresa Rayford. Good morning, Mayor Hills and the rest of the commissioners on the board. Hi, Steve. Hi, Amanda, Nick, and Dan. I'm here today because, of course, you know that I've been testifying and fighting for the rights of our youth in our community for over the last 4 years in regards to equity and access. So I've never written my testimony. I'm going to read it today because I wanted to get this right. I have 3 minutes, 2 minutes and 36 seconds. But Mayor Hills and City Commissioners, I'm urging you to call on PPS to lift the artificial enrollment cap at Benson Tech as a matter of economic equity, to give more students a career path to paid apprenticeships and to high-demand jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math. Benson Tech speaks to race, poverty, and middle-class jobs. Lifting the cap is the quickest way to fix the income inequality and to fix PPS's abysmal graduation rate, of the worst, which is the worst in the state. Washington is even doing a lot better than we are, and we know that as a nation. Benson has one of the highest graduation rates in the city compared to PPS, which has 67%. It has some of the best graduation rates for minority students and economically disadvantaged students. Though 70% of its students qualify for free and reduced lunch, and many more are non-native speakers and first-generation immigrants. Minority students are being denied an opportunity to study computer science and other targeted job creation areas in the Portland plan, and to keep them at lesser performing schools without marketable job skills or BALI approved apprenticeships. That is a crime, I believe that, because we are dealing with it as a gang issue and it's an economic issue. Major manufacturers, including Precision Castparts, ESCO, Vigor, have all called upon the civic leaders as jobs issues to foster a skilled workforce in target job creation clusters. These employers are going out of state to hire skilled technicians for jobs that pay $100,000 plus. Without an advanced degree, due to the lack of a skilled workforce, manufacturing is 28% of our state's GDP and rapidly growing sector with family wage jobs. PGE, Northwest Natural, Pacific Power, they have also called for the cap to be lifted to meet the workforce needs. These companies employ 8,000 people with average salaries of $80,000 a year. The city has an interest as a jobs interest to attract and retain businesses seeking a skilled workforce. Youth unemployment is at its highest since World War II, and Benson is the career piece of the cradle to career. It provides relevant career training, training for target job creation clusters in the Portland plan, including software, advanced manufacturing, electronics, and health sciences. Benson has capacity to serve 2,000 students, yet PPS has artificially capped enrollment at 850. It's turned away hundreds of students and denied them a career path out of poverty. Where students used to study computer science and engineering, PPS is running drug rehab and study computer science instead of computer science and engineering. These programs need to be relocated to empty buildings to free up the instructional space for high school and high-demand STEM programs. PPS has 2 years and half, 2.5 years of high school and 80% of high school students unable to get a full schedule of classes, according to a complaint filed with the Oregon Department of Education. We are heading for a strike, and that will move the city further from equity. It is time for an intervention to double down on programs that work, like Benson Tech. Please exert leverage on the school board and find 4 votes to lift the cap as a matter of economic equity. Also, there are two events happening at Benson this week on the 13th and the 14th. It's their 94th annual tech show. You have been invited before. I hope that you show up this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Would you please make a copy of that available to us?
I've given it to the clerk, and she'll make sure that you have them.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Item 134, request of Ibrahim Mubarak to address council regarding R2-D2.
Good morning, Ibrahim.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I hope that you all had a good night's rest, and I hope that it was warm and dry and safe. What I want to bring to City Council is, you know what, I can't do this. I talk from my head. What's happening out in the streets, humans, the citizens of the city, they campsites, the homeless people are being swept. When they being swept, their stuff is being taken. They sleeping bags, their coats, their shoes, they prescribed medicine. And you, Mayor Hales, you can stop these sweeps. These sweeps are unnecessary. People are dying out there. From my knowledge right now, the count is 5 people died because of their sleeping bags, their tents have been destroyed by the police officer. And when I read that Chief Reese said Prosper Portland and he wanted to get rid of all the houseless people, and I went and talked to Sergeant Darby and he said they're going to continue the sweeps, that's ludicrous. That's absurd, man. People need a safe place to stay. I know that we see them on the streets, you all see them on the streets, and everybody else see them on the sidewalk. But that's because they don't have enough affordable housing, enough warming shelter, enough shelters, or enough Right to Dream 2. I'm coming to you as a member of Right to Survive, not Right to Dream 2 today, and I told y'all I would be nice, but this is absurd when I hear that someone else, that 2 people died living on the streets. And the citizens and the human beings and the houseless community and the house community depend on you, Mayor Hale. You just came back from South Africa. I hope you saw some things there that was astounding and that it changed your mind about the houseless situation here. I appreciate that you allowed Josh Alpert to work with Right to Dream 2 to help it become permanent and stable. But we need to do something about these sweeps. So I'm asking you if you can stop these sweeps until we can find a suitable solution where people can get off the sidewalk. Because when you sweep them, Mayor Hale, they have nowhere to go. They stuff is gone, especially if someone have mental issues and they prescribe medicine is taken from them and they act out of the way. Why? And they go to jail. And you're criminalizing people for exercising their human rights. And we have a right to dream. So don't sweep our dreams away. Keep us intact. Keep us on the street and work with us. That's all I have to say. Right.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks.
Item 135, request of Leslie Foran to address council regarding elders in action.
Good morning, Leslie. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and Council. My name is Leslie Foran, and I'm the Executive Director of Elders in Action. We are honored to work with our Council Liaison, Commissioner Nick Fish, serving as the federally mandated Advisory Council to the City of Portland. Since 1968, Elders in Action staff and volunteers have worked to help ensure that city services are age-friendly to our elder population, and that city staff, its bureaus, and its community organizations are prepared to serve and engage this aging demographic. We are a nonprofit organization that receives funding from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. ONI funds equate to 26% of our total organizational budget. We operate with a small staff of 7 and engage over 180 volunteers. Today, I wanted to share with you 2 brief examples of how Elders in Action provides a crucial link in the public-private partnership that is required for our community to thrive. Using our personal advocate model, we have developed a way for volunteers to assist the Portland Police Bureau Elder Crimes Unit in serving the most vulnerable in our community. This collaboration is in spirit of the Police Bureau's commitment to working with community organizations in an efficient manner. We currently have two outstanding volunteer advocates who dedicate 8 hours per week out at the Elder Crimes Unit in Southeast Portland. They directly work with detectives to make personal contact with older adults who experience things such as identity theft, fraud, and theft of property, personal property. Oftentimes, this is the first point of contact and an entry point for Elders in Action to reach out to individuals who might be in need. We greatly appreciate the leadership of Sergeant Tim Musgrave for his commitment and investment in engaging this community. We've also been working with Portland State University Institute on Aging, the city, and other community partners on the implementation of the Age Friendly Cities Action Plan that Council adopted in October of 2013. The Age Friendly Portland Advisory Council, which Elders in Action is a founding member, has prioritized three areas for its first year: employment and economic development, housing models for an aging population, and community awareness and engagement. Elders in Action is specifically focused on developing strategies to specifically engage older adults in an upcoming civic engagement project called What Are Old People For?, slated later for this fall. We're also providing a framework for engaging the business community through our age-friendly business network in implementing important aspects of the plan around hiring older adults and highlighting the substantial contributions they offer to employers. The Advisory Council looks forward to reporting back to the full council later this year. It's a privilege to be able to share and highlight the work of Elders in Action with you today. I'm humbled every day by the staff and volunteers' commitment who ensure we all age with dignity. I extend an open invitation to all council members and their staff to utilize our services, to access our volunteers. I know you'll be impressed and inspired with our work. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Leslie?
Mayor, before we lose Leslie, I just want to offer a tangible example of what one of the services that Elders in Action provides to the city, and that is that they review our brochures and our written publications and give us advice as to how to make them more age-friendly. And I've Leslie brought with her today one of the examples. Our utilities offer discounts to older adults. And what I learned last year is that the brochures that we had created as a city to explain the benefits were written in font that most older adults couldn't read. In fact, quite frankly, I couldn't read them. And the information was organized in such a way that it was bewildering. So we gave our brochures to Elders in Action and asked for feedback. And they came back with a laundry list of problems, including the fact that we had as many as 12 different phone numbers that we were urging people to call without a single point of contact. They were not legible, the information was laid out in a confusing manner, and on and on and on. So this is an example of the partnership that we have with Elders. And I would urge all my colleagues to invite them in to help redesign your brochures and public communications. It's eye-opening when you get their feedback and realize that we've done actually a poor job communicating with a significant part of our population.
Oh, yeah, this is nice. It's really well done. Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Mayor, if I may add to that, I wanted to take my appreciation for your participation in our advisory committee on transportation funding, and we'll really benefit from Elders in Action's advice on how to build an age-friendlier transportation system.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate your use of volunteers. You're a great advocacy organization. You're helping people with services, but you're also giving a lot of people an opportunity to make a difference as volunteers, retired people who might have some time, or whoever. But I think that's really a hallmark of how you've operated. It's great.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 136, request of Stefan Karlick to address council regarding Hayden Island and the Columbia River crossing.
Stefan, come on up. Morning.
Morning, Mayor Hales, City Council. I'm a representative of the Hayden Island Manufactured Home Community, Hayden Island Livability Project, and on the board of High Known. I'm founder of the Feral Cat Resources on Hayden Island. On behalf of the residents of Hayden Island, thank you for asking the port the correct questions. And a special thanks to our representative, Amanda Fritz. I was going to talk about jobs on the island that have been lost due to the port's ambitions on West Hayden Island. However, that has been resolved for right now. And we are currently working with the port to establish a trail onto the beaches of West Hayden Island. And this is going through private property, and the port is kicking in $25,000 to make this a safe area to get into, which brings up the question of public safety. It's not only for the people visiting, but anyone within a five-mile radius of West Hayden Island. At the moment, hunting is allowed on West Hayden Island. The sheets I've provided you there give you the distance and trajectories and information on bullets and the consequences thereof. I'm asking that the mayor and the city council approach the state and ban the hunting on West Hayden Island. The beaches are going to be open to the public, and if you see the graphs that I've given you there, I tracked a flight coming in on Monday on the Port of Portland noise management website. At the east end of the island, as the planes come around Sophie Island, the flight is at 2,600 feet. When it comes across the river to the tip of the island, it's at 2,100 feet, and the tip of West Hayden Island is 1,900, and the east tip is 600 feet. Now, if you see those two pictures in there, that is pictures of Air Force One taken from my house as it was flying over. That was at 800 feet. The chances for an errant bullet to hit an airplane is a distinct possibility. And also, if you look at the map there, some of the bullets can travel 5 miles. That's 25,000 feet. There's a chance of someone getting hurt in Portland, working on the dockside, Portland Vancouver downtown, and all the way over to anyone on Marine Drive, and also the residents on Hayden Island in the manufactured home park. So again, I would request that you take action to prevent the hunting on West Hayden Island.
Appreciate you bringing this to our attention. Frankly, I wasn't aware that hunting was allowed there, so that's news to me. I appreciate you letting us know. It's obviously there are a lot of people within a few hundred yards of that island.
Mayor, I just was curious, since we have Mr. Karlick here, do you know who does regulate hunting?
Fish and Game. The problem is that the port doesn't allow hunting on the island itself. However, on the beaches, on the regular high tide mark, is controlled by Oregon Wildlife, Fish and Game, and other agencies. And trying to get an active response for actually who is responsible for that hunting license it's beyond our scope right now.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you bringing this to our attention. That really is kind of it's concerning news, and it's news to me that was even legal there. I thought the port, as you say, the port's generally barred access to their property, but the beaches are a different story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 137, request of Barry Joe Stoll to address council regarding the devil in music.
Good morning, Barry. It's an interesting topic that you have chosen.
It's Barry Joe, but that's okay. Hardly anybody gets that right unless they've known me for a while. Sad to see Commissioner Fish leave here. I've got a college degree in music, and Fela says that music is the weapon of the future, which probably goes pretty far to speak of why I've been so disarmed. I lost thousands of dollars worth of musical instruments. My nonprofit affordable housing landlord filed an eviction case. It wasn't even legal to file in court. I know what filing a case means. My Supreme Court case, Stahl versus Hoke, 326 OR 72, 1997 defines the act of filing, so we know what the landlord wasn't allowed to do. But that's okay, we followed that up on the destruction of my goods. And decades of compositions, my legal research, I was appealing a felony conviction for possession of marijuana when I was protected under the Medical Marijuana Act, which probably goes far to explain why these people were allowed to be criminals and continue to be. Well, what we've got here is a symbol. You might recognize this. Looks like a piano keyboard. I had one of those. Got thrown in a dump. But anyhow, we look at this and we see a pattern of two black keys and three black keys and two black keys and three black keys. Well, there's only 12 different possibilities. So what I've done is I put the tritone, which is named the devil in music because it sounds kind of weird. It's three whole steps. I put that right there in the middle so we can see that the pattern really is white key, black key, white key, black key, white key, white key. Or as I teach my students, your view, do, re, mi, fa. And then the other one would be sol, la, ti, do. Each scale is made up of two halves. The devil tricks us into thinking this is actually two and three when it's really two and two and one in the middle that we skip over. So we have in our Western music, we have 21 names for 12 different things. So we can make 15 major scales. Sound like we're trying to make it easy? No, we're not. We're trying to make it hard. The reason we're trying to make it hard is because music has power. It heals people. It's like housing has power. It heals people, which is why you continue to deny both of those things from me. So I broke it down and put it on this clock here. And I start here with Fat Cats Get Drunk at Ed's Bar, which is the order of the way sharps appear, the way flats disappear, and called the circle of fifths. So I start with F flat at 4 o'clock, and I go, Fat Cats Get Drunk at Ed's Bar, getting over here to 10 o'clock, and then I start with all the naturals, Fat Cats Get Drunk at Ed's Bar. I get over here to 4 o'clock, which was F flat, which is correctly known as E, also has two names. And then I continue here with the sharps at 6 o'clock, Fat Cats Get Drunk at Ed's Bar. I've taken these 21 things and I put them on a 12-hour clock. Made it simple. Now, as soon as you all start acting honest and honorable, start prosecuting the criminals that I've given you the evidence of being criminals, then things are going to be a lot better for all of us, and maybe an angry mob won't drag you out of your houses and lynch you.
All right. Thank you, Barry Joe. Thank you very much.
Mr. Stowe?
Yes, sir.
I just have to ask you a question that came to mind when I saw this item. Can you tell me what the devil is more likely to do in a given day, wear a blue dress or go down to Georgia?
You know,
you count on him for that.
the trick is that the devil is, and many people would argue that the devil doesn't actually exist. Now, whether evil exists, that's something we'd have to really start to delve into. Now, I think on that topic, the apartment that I was evicted from is a fiveplex. Affordable housing, and it's vacant now. And I told our housing commissioner in paper on December 18th that it was vacant, and I checked last night when there was snow on the ground. People are sleeping in doorways on my way to the Max this morning, and that fiveplex is still vacant, 4066 Northeast Grand Avenue in Portland. I will give Carla the document that I scanned that gave to the commissioner Saltzman, but the reality is Commissioner Fish appointed that nonprofit affordable housing landlord to his Fair Housing Commission. So we can't act like any of this is good, and we can start acting like it's evil.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay, let's take up the...